dear friends of Jesus Christ, do you remember that scene in 1 Kings 3 with Solomon, King Solomon, as a very new king, being confronted by God in a dream? And in the dream, God says, ask me, Solomon, ask me whatever it is you want. And then Solomon says, oh Lord, give me an understanding mind to govern your people and an ability to discern good from evil. And God is so pleased, do you remember, with that request? That he didn't ask for a long life, or didn't say, give me lots of money, or give me victory over all my enemies. He asked for wisdom, and God was pleased with that request. Now, it has struck me often, that in a sense, I'm not surprised that Solomon would ask for wisdom. I mean, who of us hasn't felt, in the midst of life, the great possession that wisdom would be? We want it for ourselves, we want it for our children. I mean, who is here, as a parent, for instance, who hasn't felt or been haunted by the sense that you and your children are traveling down this really dangerous road, and there are steep sides on either side, and there are no guardrails, and you keep saying to your children, not too close to the edge. Stay away from the edge. Keep to the path. Keep on the road. And then, you know, when they grow up and you lose sight of them, you just hope to God that they'll have the wisdom to stay on the path and not to wander. Do any of you remember this song by Cat Stevens? Oh, baby, baby, it's a wild world. It's hard to get by just upon a smile. You know, I've seen a lot of the world, of what the world can do, and it's breaking my heart in two, because I never want to see you sad, girl. But if you want to take leave, take good care. Hope you make a lot of nice friends out there. But just remember, there's a lot of bad, and beware. Oh, baby, baby, it's a wild world. Give them wisdom, Lord. And you know, this premium that we place on wisdom to navigate through these difficult terrains, it is a premium that the Proverbs reiterates over and over again. I mean, it says in our passage that it is more important to take wisdom than silver, and that knowledge is greater than choice gold, and for wisdom is better than jewels, and all that you may desire cannot compare with her. Wisdom is such a prize, such a good thing to have. In fact, if you were to read the end of this chapter, the claim is made that those who find wisdom find life, and that those who miss wisdom injure their souls and discover death. Wisdom. And you know, this wisdom, it's not only you or the scriptures that put a high premium on it. I was thinking, even in the Greek-Roman world, wisdom is prized. Do you remember the four virtues, the cardinal virtues? Prudence, or wisdom, justice, courage, and temperance. And prudence ranked highest among the four virtues. In fact, one philosopher says, prudence isn't just the first among equals. It isn't as though prudence were the oldest and most beautiful of the four daughters. No, prudence is the mother of all virtues. Without wisdom, without prudence, it is impossible to live the good life, say the Greeks and the Romans. And Proverbs agrees, we need wisdom. Now, in Proverbs, wisdom is personified. She speaks, she addresses, she woos, she calls our attention to seek her. She claims she brings an awful lot to the table. Therefore, take her with her. And then in the end, she gives her credentials. But wisdom here is first of all calling our attention. Notice the very first verse. Does not wisdom call, and does not understanding raise her voice? And the answer is, of course, that wisdom does call, and that she does raise her voice. And if you were to continue reading these first 9 verses, you would find wisdom shouting and calling not only in private places but in public places, at crossroads and at the city gate, constantly wisdom calling for us to be attentive to her, to hear her claims. Now the reason why wisdom is so loud and does not whisper is because wisdom knows that all of us are continually being cajoled by other voices claiming different routes, different ways of managing our way through life. I mean, there's the voice that tells us, seek fame. Seek fame. And another voice with great learning tells us, life is basically futile. You are but a speck in the universe, signifying nothing at all. And another voice says, listen, coddle yourself. Look after yourself. Go with the flow. Satisfy your desires. And so you and I, we've come here and we are acquainted with these different voices of wisdom. And so now wisdom raises its voice again. Listen to me. Listen to the claims I make, says wisdom. You know, somebody once made the observation that when a minister climbs into the pulpit, it's like a prize fighter entering the ring. It's a fight. And I like that image, but I think it's too narrow. I think this whole sanctuary is like a ring. And all of us have come to do battle against the voices that would take us this way or that way. And in the midst of it, we hear the words of wisdom in the songs that we sing, in the liturgy that we recite, in the sermon that we hear, in the sacraments that we witness. Witness beckons us to hear us, to hear it. To pay attention to her. And as I said, wisdom doesn't simply whisper this in your private times, because wisdom is not merely for your inner mind. It does it. It's public. I mean, it wants to be heard in the marketplace and in the playground, in the classroom and in the boardroom. I mean, there may be a line or a wall that separates the church from the state, but on either side of the wall, wisdom wants to be heard. Wisdom calls us to pay attention, to give her all ears. So that first of all, there's this call on the part of wisdom to be attentive to her and to her claims. Now this question, what then is this wisdom that is so all important? What is the nature of this wisdom? If you read this verse, these verses, you'll notice that it is a close colleague with prudence. This is in verse 12. I live with prudence and I attain knowledge and discretion. Those are like very close cousins to wisdom. Discretion and understanding and prudence. To have this wisdom is not the same as being well-read or well-informed. You can have a PhD and still be a fool. To be wise, as Proverbs would want us wise, does not guarantee, for instance, a place in an Ivy League school or a great scholarship, winnings in some game show, or even the Nobel Prize. This wisdom, it is a guide. It is a way to find holiness and discipleship and goodness. Neil Planning, in his book, Not the Way Things Are Supposed to Be, has a chapter, a wonderful chapter, on sin and folly. Folly. And he says wisdom, in the scriptures, is a knowledge of God's world and a knack of fitting into that. Wisdom is this ability to take a proper read of things so that the wise person knows what's important and what's not important, what are trivial pursuits and what are pursuits of great consequence. Wisdom has a sense of what's important and where the road is leading, and sticking to that road, and that to miss this road or to be mistaken about what's essential will poison the soul and cause death. A couple weeks ago, I got this report on a report that was put together by 33 medical doctors, health counselors, and high school counselors. It was published by Dartmouth College. And it addressed this terrible phenomenon of our young people not being well. That there are way too many, this report says, sitting in our waiting rooms with depression, suicidal tendencies, drugs, and one out of four does not become a productive human being in life. Something is wrong, they said. And after much study, you know what they concluded? That what was missing in so many of these young people was a sense of belonging. It's that we are apparently hardwired to feel that we belong, that we are part of a community, that we are loved and valued. Secondly, they said, what so many of these young people miss is a sense of meaning. And they argued that it apparently is true that young people, like adults, want purpose in their lives. They want to know that they are, that their lives signify something, and it's more about things. They need meaning. They need to believe that this journey has a destination and a homecoming. And the third thing they said was that so many of our young people miss what they called authoritative communities. Teachers, parents, preachers, who said, here are the guardrails. Stay away from those things. This is the way. This is where safety and happiness and blessedness is found. See, the wise person has a sense of what's important in life and what's not. What are the trivial pursuits and what are the pursuits of great consequence? How to get home and how to get lost. If wisdom does that, Proverbs says, and by the way, Proverbs, the word itself simply means sayings. These are the sayings of the wise. These are the collected sayings of God's people as you and I and our children make our way through this world. And over again, they say this wisdom that is able to take a true reading of reality begins, you know where it begins? With a fear of God. I mean, that is at the heart of this whole book, that the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. And here too, in our own little reading, there is this reference to fear, verse 13. The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil. Now, I got to say something about this business of fearing God. I've seen t-shirts, and they probably mean something that I don't understand, but they say, no fear. And that always strikes me as a bit foolish. I mean, we ought not to be fear-driven, right? But fear has a positive side. It's because we fear accidents that we tell our children to look both ways before they cross the street. It is because of fear of disease and ill health that we watch our diet, do our exercises. It's because of fear of thievery that we lock our doors. For fear of dangers, we do all sorts of things. And not to fear is foolishness. And there is no greater foolishness than not fearing God. To pay no heed to God and what God wants. Now I know that fearing God does not mean being terrified of God. David Hubbard, who was at one time president of Fuller Seminary, has a commentary on Proverbs, and he defines fear as a reverent obedience. And he says at the center of it is awe and adoration and worship. And that this burning center radiates into our ordinary lives. So that that person who is energized by the fear of God sees every moment of the day as God's time. Sees every relationship as God's opportunity. Sees every duty and task as God's command. Sees every blessing, every season of goodness as God's gifts. As God's gift. He says to have this fear of God is to see our lives from God's perspective. What God values. How God has constructed us. Now here it says that this fear of God is to be coupled with a hate of evil. And then it identifies the evil. You see that? As arrogance and pride and perverted speech. You see, by definition, arrogance and pride are hostile to God. Whereas the fear of God would instruct us that we must lean on God and not on our own understanding. Whereas the fear of God would teach us over and over again that we are here living altogether on the gifts of God. Pride and arrogance would claim this for itself and strut as if it were not blessed by God. It is a great evil. The fear of God hates arrogance, hates pride. And the truth of the matter is, those of us who have lots of gifts, who have places of honor in society, good brains, the very things that the world so prizes, those of us who have those things are most prone to such things and to lose this sense that we owe it all to God. Anyway, this wisdom, which takes a proper read of things, understands the flow of things, has a grasp both of our nature and of our destiny, that wisdom begins with this fear of God. Now, in this chapter, wisdom goes on to lay out its credentials. And it says, and we only have the first verse of it in verse 22, the Lord created me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts of long ago. And then it goes on and on to explain that wisdom was there when God laid the foundations. Wisdom claims that she was there when he dug the deeps for the waters. Wisdom declares herself to be what? A master worker, a skilled craftsman. Wisdom. And because wisdom has this high pedigree, it is able to give us true understanding of how we must live our lives. Now, the great mystery, of course, is that this wisdom became flesh so we could see it up close. See it not as a formula or a difficult treatise on ethics, but see it in a person. Because according to John's gospel, the word, the Logos, which was with God, that Logos became flesh. And the word Logos, you know, we translate it as word. But Philo, a Jewish philosopher, for instance, identified Logos as the reason of God, as that ordering principle in the world. And so now if wisdom is creation's blueprint, that in Jesus Christ that blueprint becomes flesh and dwells among us, and we see it in a person, Jesus Christ, and we see in the longings of his heart that what he longs for is the restoration of his creation, and the restoration of his creation is to bring you and me back to the Father, and to bring you and me back to our brothers and sisters, and to bring you and me back to the creation at peace with one another. You see that we see that now up close in the person of Jesus Christ. And in this person we see how many things block this restoration. And how this one who became flesh takes the sin and bears it away so that there need be no obstacles any longer between us and God, between us and our neighbors, and between us and the creation. To have wisdom is to have the life of Christ in us. To learn this wisdom is to keep a close eye on Jesus Christ. Who is the wisdom? Who is the blueprint to the life that God intended for us when he made us? May we find this wisdom, commit our lives to this wisdom, and in the process discover life indeed. Because to miss it is to injure our soul and to find death. The way of wisdom leads to life. Amen.